Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
Now, I have in my hand here a book called Major Labels, or to give it the full title, Major Labels, A History of Popular Music in Seven Genres. I mean, it's a book about how music unites and divides us, and how we build communities and identity through music. I mean, you only have to think of the labels like rocker or mod or punk to see how much music is tied up with tribal identity. The book is written by New Yorker magazine staff writer Khalifa Sana, and he joins me now to discuss this. So, Khalifa, the idea of labels and genres, listeners in their formative years used pop to define who they are, their identities, the tribes they're with. Do they do that still?
You know, I think the truth is that as long as people use music in some way to figure out who they are, then I think you're going to find within that those labels, right? Because to me, a label, a genre in music is really a community. Musical communities, like all communities, are defined by inclusion and exclusion, right? Some people are in, other people are out. And I think we as humans, we love being part of communities, even though at other times we get a little itchy and we want to expand beyond a community, right? We get annoyed by the limits of community. And I think as long as music plays an important role in terms of people loving it that much, loving it enough to have it change their lives, then you're always going to get musical communities of a sort. And you're always going to get people finding ways to say, like, no, I like this music, but not that. The broader question is, are people still going to love music, right? Is music going to become one of those things like the theater, right? Which exists as an art form, but you don't necessarily go to your local high school and ask the kids who their favorite playwright is. And luckily for me as a music fan, I don't yet see any evidence that music is going away or that its power is diminishing.
Okay, but you yourself, I mean, like, you loved punk.
Yeah.
But you didn't see yourself represented in it necessarily.
Right.
So there's also the attraction to an art form where you're not represented.
Yes, to an alien art form, right? And typically popular music, that's been one of the things it's really great at, is you see, you know, David Bowie up on stage and you kind of think two things at once. You think, who is that exotic creature who's so unlike me, so unlike the world I live in? But you also think, I see something of myself in him, even though, or maybe precisely because he seems so alien, so unusual. And the thrill of pop is often those two thrills at once, the thrill of alienness and the thrill of intimacy, of representation.
Okay, well, you have, like, this is the history of popular music in seven genres, is what you call it. Now, Khalifa, like, you know, if we're looking at the something like, say, the Grammys, who really need to know their genres in order to get, they've 83 separate. I mean, like,
I know, it's a lot.
If you're a band and you haven't won a Grammy, you're obviously no good.
Well, you got to, it's like the Olympics, right? You have to pick one of the less popular genres, and then your odds of getting a medal go way up.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. Yeah. Okay, but seriously, like, I mean, rock, alternative, folk, Americana, American roots, urban contemporary, progressive R&B. This is what we're talking about here. There's so many genres, but there's so many subgenres. And you kind of defend them in this book in some way. Well, you certainly defend the genres.
Right. Yeah. I mean, well, it's funny with the Grammys, you see musicians who in some ways hate to be categorized. You also see when the country singer Kacey Musgraves was nominated for a Grammy, not in the country category, but in the pop category, she said, hey, wait a second, I want to be part of this country community. I want to be considered part of it. So at different times, musicians like being considered part of a genre, or they dislike it. I think, you know, the subgenres, the reason those, like, subgenres and those complicated categories exist, again, comes back to this idea of community. Like, one of the things that can be wonderful about music is a sense of intimacy. And to create that sense of intimacy, it needs to be a little bit small, to have that sense that I got from punk rock, that most people don't like it, but a few people do. And you can go down the rabbit hole and be in this world, right? And feel like you're in communion with the bands and with fellow listeners. And sometimes it helps for that community to be small in order to feel intimate. And that's one reason why anytime there is a genre that gets big, you have other people dissenting from it, forming subgenres, forming offshoots. Part of that is that urge to form smaller and more intimate communities.
Okay, well, we had Dave Grohl on the program just a few weeks ago, and he's written in his book just all about how difficult it was for him to be taken seriously or to be allowed move into what was a different kind of music, more mainstream, more commercial, whatever, than he had supposedly laid his roots, which is in, like, you know, very hardcore, almost punk or pre-grunge, whatever you want to call it, etc. And just like, hold on a second, I'm into music and I'm allowed to go elsewhere. And he's found it very difficult because a lot of people said, you've sold out.
And one of the things he writes about in his book is his gateway experience of going to see a punk band called Naked Ray Gun at a concert in Chicago. And part of what he loved about it, part of what he loved about the Washington, D.C. hardcore punk scene was that it was a subculture with its own ethos and its own community and those rules. So those rules that kind of, you know, that he had trouble with once he's a big rock star in Nirvana and he's starting the Foo Fighters, those rules are part of what drew him into music in the first place. That's part of what made it seem exciting enough to him that he wants to, like, leave high school and go travel the world. So often it's both. And I think that's a very human reaction, right? Like, you see that in politics, you see that in religion. We want to be part. There's something seductive about a world that feels sort of tight knit. Even as often as we grow up, we start feeling a little bit restless and we want to go have freedom to do something else. And again, part of what we want from music is those two things. We want music to give us that sense of community, and we want music to give us that sense of freedom.
Well, then, like, devotion to a sound, which is what you say, like, from hip hop to death metal, whatever it is, it's about community, it's about belonging, and it signifies our togetherness. And of course, it signals our differences as well. So pop, and whatever pop was in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and beyond, pop really is now a label, isn't it? It's not a genre.
Well, yeah, it kind of, the question of whether pop is a genre is a tricky one, right? For a long time, pop was a way of gesturing at everything, right? It was a way of gesturing at so-called light music. If you think of, like, some symphony orchestras, like the Boston Pops, because they played light music at the turn of the century. And then pop, for a while, sometimes it meant stuff that wasn't classical, or it meant music that wasn't classical music or jazz. And by the 70s, pop comes to be a pejorative often, right? The Carpenters are a pop act because they're not a real rock and roll band. And so pop is something you don't want to be. Pop means you're homeless. It means you've given up your genre, or maybe you never had one, to quote unquote go pop. And it's not really until the 1980s, especially in the UK with the so-called new pop movement, or the new romantic, or the new wave movement, that comes after punk, that you get a bunch of people waving the flag for pop and saying, I'm proud to be a pop act. Pop is my genre. And in fact, when you hear someone now, a singer like Robin, for example, from Sweden, who is a pop singer and proud of it, a lot of the time, part of what that means is they're drawing from that sound of the 1980s. And so pop, in a weird way, kind of got fixed a little bit as this 1980s aesthetic. And now you have something called hyperpop, which is a version of pop music where you take all the tropes of 80s pop and you exaggerate them so that this very mainstream thing now sounds very strange.
Okay, but just to get back to the notions of possibly old-fashioned purism, authenticity, etc. But genre does feel surely increasingly irrelevant to the way we think about and create and consume art in general.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is true. We are living in a moment where things are sort of combining and colliding, and it's Lil Nas X and Billie Eilish and Post Malone and who knows what genre.
There's the biggest one of all. There's the biggest example of all. Lil Nas X. I mean, seriously, what happened there? Explain that to me. That just blew everything out of the water, didn't it?
Are you talking about when he was on and then off the country chart when he came out with Old Town Road?
Yeah, it was Old Town Road and the massive success of it. This is this kind of black hip hop guy doing whatever it happens to be. Oh, yeah, country music. Now, that's surely every barrier broke down with that one song, surely.
Yeah, except that, you know, there was a big controversy because in the US, that song Old Town Road ended up being taken off the country chart. A lot of controversy about why that would happen. But one explanation was that he wasn't really a country artist, which is to say his fan base was not necessarily country listeners. And I think one definition...
So wait a minute, hold on a second. So in other words, you're defining this now by him as opposed to his music.
I'm defining it really. I think often the most useful definition of a genre has to do with the audience. Is there an audience that's devoted to this thing? And what does that audience like? And you've seen that in the history of R&B, where sometimes there have been quote unquote R&B singers who do better on pop radio stations than on R&B stations. And so you know that, you know, maybe the R&B demographic isn't embracing them. And that's what you saw with Lil Nas X. You saw this guy who had this song that, you know, was a little twangy and was called Old Town Road. And maybe he's wearing a cowboy hat. But one question you could ask is like that fan base of country listeners, is that what they're into? Now, you might wish they were into it. You might think they should be listening to it, but it tells us something important if they're not listening to it. And one of the reasons it's worth paying attention to genres is because those genres denote communities. And so one of the interesting things about, say, country music is that it is a community, and we can look and see what they are listening to and what they aren't listening to. And so I think part of the debate about Lil Nas X was partly this debate about how you define a genre. And I think in the long run, it is probably true that Lil Nas X is a pop act, or, you know, maybe with a little bit of hip hop too, and he's drawing from all those things. But the other thing I would say is that over time, there have been moments like this before. I think of the late 1970s, where all of a sudden everything was disco, and the Rolling Stones had a disco song, and Rod Stewart had a disco song, and the Bee Gees were disco, and Diana Ross and Donna Summer, there was a Star Wars disco song. Like, and that was another one of these moments of everything kind of coming together and these genre barriers breaking down a little bit. And of course, what we discovered was you get a huge backlash. People don't like that, right? As much as people like the idea of everyone coming together, that created a moment of people saying like, no, I don't want to be like you. I don't want everyone to be together. I want to do something else. And so it's possible that the current moment we're living through now, where the genres are breaking down a little bit, maybe that sets the stage for the next backlash, the next cohort of musicians to say, no, I don't want to make so-called Spotify pop. I don't want everything to have so-called trap drums and minor key keyboard and mumbled lyrics. I want to do something totally separate from that as a way of reflecting that very adolescent or maybe very human urge to say, I'm not like you, right? And that's one of the things that music can do is it can give us ways to express that thought that I'm not like you.
Okay, but like taking in different sounds can sometimes work. I mean, I think it worked on Houses of the Holy by Led Zeppelin when they went reggae with Jamaica. I think it worked for the Stones when they did Miss You and went disco, etc. Now, I don't think it really worked for Rod, but I don't think Rod gave a damn when I didn't think he was sexy. But anyway, all of those things. I mean, like rock, let's just take a look at rock and let's try and define rock. I mean, it does stretch from 60s Laurel Canyon to Norwegian death metal, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes. And often, ironically, if you are more rooted in a genre, in other words, if you're Led Zeppelin and you're like one of the ultimate biggest rock bands, that can give you a little more freedom to explore, to do a little bit of reggae, to have folky passages and maintain your membership in that community, right? No one's saying like, oh, well, Led Zeppelin's not a rock band because there's acoustic guitar in this song. And so often something that musicians have found, country musicians have found this too, is that if your membership in a community is that strong culturally, you have freedom to explore and you can still be considered part of it. If you're Dolly Parton, you're as country as they come. And so even when you're singing 9 to 5, which basically a disco song, you're still country because that's a cultural identity as much as a musical identity.
By the way, we're talking to Khalifa Sane, and this is a big one, because did you really undertake a written exam to try to be a DJ in college? And if so, I'd love to know what the questions were.
I did. It was a multi-part exam. I went to Harvard, and to join the radio station, the punk rock department at the radio station, you had to first pass a written exam, which had it had listening identification questions where they would play you little snippets of music and you had to react to them. I think there were some open-ended essay questions. And then once you passed the exam, there was like an unofficial semester-long course where every Sunday, I think it was, there'd be a lecture about some aspect of the history of punk rock. And there'd be a listening assignment with between 5 and 10 records you had to listen to and write down your commentary. And, you know, of course, this is ridiculous, obviously. And of course, you're free to say you hate this stuff. But I remember coming in, I had thought that like punk means breaking the rules, man. Punk means there are no rules. And in a way, this taught me a less sentimental version of that history. No, punk rock is a specific phenomenon. It has a specific history. The Ramones don't sound like anarchy. In fact, the Ramones were borrowing from bands that came before them. They were borrowing from the Stooges, and the Stooges were borrowing from the Sonics and the Seeds. And like, there is a specific history. And to know that, and to know that, no, punk doesn't mean everything. It means a specific thing. that was really important to me. And it also got me thinking about the relationship between musical rebellion and musical orthodoxy, that every movement has rules, even maybe especially the movements that claim to not have rules, right? There's always a rule. There's always a guiding principle. There's always some way of figuring out what's in and what's out.
Well, then when genres really move, they become lifestyle, don't they? They become like a uniform. I'm thinking metal, I'm thinking disco, rap, punk. Isn't that what happens? It's the broader thing, fashion, music, politics, the works.
Yeah, that is often why it's worth caring about, right? That it's not just like, oh, you have to use this kind of guitar. It's like a whole thing you can buy into. It's so it's a way of dressing, it's a way of living, it's a way of joining a tribe. And you know, that's what makes music interesting. That's what hopefully makes it interesting to read about some of these tribes, even if we don't want to join them, right? Like hopefully, even if you don't ever want to listen to heavy metal, you can read about heavy metal in my book and you can say, like, oh, well, that's interesting how that world works. I understand why that captured people's imagination, even if it doesn't capture my imagination. The social identity of music is what makes it, I think, uniquely powerful.
And if we go back to something like jazz, and I do say go back for a second or two, like people say proper jazz. I mean, you have a stand-up double bass, that's proper jazz. A bass guitar around your neck, just a bass, that's not proper jazz.
Right, right.
It's there too, isn't it? It's everywhere.
Yeah. Country music used to have those rules, right? For a long time, you weren't allowed to have a drum kit on the stage of the Grand Ole Opry because country music was supposed to be about string instruments, right? And now in country, you have country records that are using hip hop style beats. And sometimes people are even rapping and they have electronic elements in it. And again, the thing that makes those songs country is the cultural identity of the musicians and the listeners, right? I talked to Morgan Wallen, who's one of the big current country stars, and he said he didn't even really grow up listening to country music. He grew up listening to like hard rock bands, but because he grew up in a small town in Tennessee, his cultural identity was country. The idea of music as a kind of a cultural essence is one of the ways it can be powerful.
Hip hop, are the best days of hip hop behind it?
No. And the reason I say no is because hip hop has kept changing. That's the thing that kept it fresh. Hip hop in the 90s didn't sound like hip hop in the 80s. And hip hop now, depending on how you define it, but whether it's someone like Travis Scott, who's recently been in the news, like his records do not sound like the records people were making 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Someone like Young Thug doesn't sound like what was happening then. So to me, as long as it keeps evolving, and as long as people keep doing interesting, new, strange things with hip hop, and as long as it keeps drawing these huge audiences, that is to me how I measure the health of hip hop. And again, at the margins, it's hard to define. I say in the book, one of the most important hip hop figures to me now is Bad Bunny, who's an artist from Puerto Rico who makes what's sometimes called Latin trap music. It's not entirely clear whether it's strictly speaking is hip hop at all, but it has some of that spirit. And it certainly has a certain novelty to it where 10, 20 years from now, I wouldn't be surprised if people think of this era as, among other things, the Bad Bunny era, and that could be ground zero for a whole new generation of musicians.
The focus of music itself in general as the force that brings people together, surely some of that is gone, like tech or internet or something has taken over.
Well, I think there are other things competing for attention, but one of the things I love about music is it's sneaky. Like, it's not like a movie where you have to stop what you're doing and turn out the lights and sit there for 2 minutes, like 2 hours, right? Music can be playing in the background, right? You talk about the social forces, but like the most popular videos on YouTube are music videos, right? A new platform like TikTok is largely driven by music. So often when people are get together, when they're gaming, whether they're doing whatever they're doing, often there's music in the background. So I certainly haven't seen any sign yet. I'm crossing my fingers, although you can't see that on the radio. I haven't seen any sign yet that music is losing its power, that music is getting less prominent, is getting less widespread. If anything, we're getting more music than we ever were before.
Indeed. Well, it's a fascinating discussion, and it's all there in the book. Fascinating there as well. Major Labels, A History of Popular Music in 7 Genres. Khalifa, thank you so much for talking to us in the program today.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for not asking me to sing.
All right. Thanks, Khalifa. Take it easy.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.